A brand new program put on by the Center for Native American Studies here at Northern Michigan University is called Elder in Residence, and the first Elder in Residence to grace the campus is in the studio with me this morning, Warren Petoskey from the Northern Lower Michigan Petoskey area. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
It's quite an exciting time for us here at the university to have this Native American Studies program expand as it has with they're in the process of having a bachelor's degree program in Native American Studies.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Well, we lived in Kamehameha Bay for a lot of years, and I followed the program here because I thought it was a real promising effort and a promotion of what we were trying to do and to help our young people with their education. And I've known April Lindela for a long time. Mm-hmm. And Marty Reinhardt, I knew his family. And come to find out, his wife, Tina, we're related too. So maybe we're all cousins. I don't know.
Well, as you were saying earlier, we all really do come from tribes.
Yes, we do.
We do.
Red, yellow, black, or white, we came from tribes. And a lot of what's happened to us, there's a political, religious, social, economic system that came in and started dictating our existence as to who we are and what we are. And we had to have permission, you know, to express that, you know, and we have Quarter Blood Quantum now and a lot of other, you know, I have a status card and I joke with people, they say, well, Warren, they let you off the res. And I said, but I have my green card with me.
It seems so odd that you have to prove who you are in order to exist.
It was always, you know, and I have shared with you that my grandfather went to Carlisle and
that was a Native American boarding school.
A boarding school
in
Carlisle, Pennsylvania. No, this one was run by the government.
Oh, by the government, right.
And it was a model. And Hitler copied the model of Carlisle for his Brown Youth Corps.
Mm.
And when the United States complained about the treatment of the German youth that were recruited into that Brown Youth Corps and how they were taken a lot of times out of their home by force, and Hitler said to the U.S. government at the time, he said, well, I don't know what you're hollering at because you've already done this to the Indian people. And Hitler said if you had one drop of Jewish blood, as far as he was concerned, you were a Jew. And I say if you have one drop of Native blood, as far as I'm concerned, you're Native. But also, you know, saying that when I have an opportunity to speak, I say first I'm a human being. And I'm a member of the human race. And as a member of the human race, whether we're red, yellow, black, or white, we have something very much in common. And the only dissension has come is from the institutions and organizations of men. And so there's a lot of baggage that I think we have to get rid of so that we can come together again and be humans again and respect and honor each other and share fires together and just talk.
Yes.
In a good atmosphere, and it's a good atmosphere, and I see that developing, and I think the Native American Studies program is doing a lot to that end, because I see students in the program, since I've been here and I've asked how many are Native, there's a few Native students there, and there's a lot more non-Native students there that are really interested. So it says something about the lighting of the eighth fire that we're seeing a lot more non-Native people mm-hmm. coming. And they're listening because they want to know. And I have a friend in St. Joseph, Missouri, named Brian Zond, and he wrote a poem called I Caught a Glimpse of Truth Out of the Corner of My Eye. And it challenges everything that we ever knew. And I think as human beings, the question is, are we willing, do we dare to do that? Do we dare to think that?
Right.
And do we dare to make that kind of transition? Because it's not an easy one. Mm-hmm. Because we don't realize a lot of times that we've been programmed, you know, to occupy certain places of understanding and to have permission, you know, to be who we are. And I remember when I was issued my status card, I went downstate and I put it on the council table. And I said, I want you to know that before you existed, I was an Indian. And I said, I don't need this card to identify who I am. I know who I am. And I don't need your permission to be who I am, and I don't allow the federal government to dictate who I am. And so it's kind of been a transition period, and now that I'm gray-headed, and you wonder in this transition, you know, what value you might have. But the other thing that's reviving is a respect for the elders,
yes,
which is a grand to see, you know, because it was once a major part, yeah, of our culture.
Do you see that happening more and more, today's generations being more mindful of the elders and their teachings?
I see more people becoming aware, but I think the only way that that's happening is because there are more of us now that we're getting noisy as Native people, you know.
Good.
And where before, yeah, prior to this, we were pretty silent, you know, because we were afraid if we did, and we were afraid if we didn't, see. And the boarding schools had a lot to do with that, mm-hmm, and 500 years of historical trauma. And realizing that it's estimated that in the year 1700, there was 122 million of us on this continent. And by the year 1900, there was 238,000 of us left. And what people say, well, what happened in between? I said genocide, genocidal wars, germ warfare, sterilization, relocation, urbanization, all of those things.
Indoctrination.
Brainwashing. Assimilation.
Yes, yes.
And I mean, there are people today who refuse to recognize their ancestors, you know, and they avoid anything that is culturally oriented. And it's tragic, you know, because there's such a richness in that, to be able to hear that drum and to smell that good sage and to be able to make those offerings in the fire and go to Sweat Lodge. And and to be in the Jinktimuk, or the gathering of the people. Mm-hmm. And I was privileged in 1978 to be living on the Keweenaway Reservation, and to be a part in organizing the first couple powwows after Congress returned our rights to worship our own way. And up until then, it was illegal if we were caught using our pipes or doing a Sweat Lodge or those things. We had to do all of that stuff in secret.
Wow.
And otherwise, and many of our people were persecuted, ended up, some of them in Leavenworth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really think the impression was at the time that we had lost our culture and that we were not going to be capable of bringing back these things, but I think we surprised them. It had always been there and would always be here. And I did a song, it's on YouTube, called We Shall Remain. And it's an affirmation. It was something I wrote for myself, because it was an affirmation, not reaffirmation, but an affirmation of who we are.
Yes.
And that we have no intention of abandoning it. And we don't say that to be obtuse or to be oppressive, but to establish a standing place, mm-hmm, for us among population.
The native languages have been dying off as well. Have you been involved in getting the younger generation to understand their native tongue
more? Well, I know, yeah. One of the things that goes on with that goes along with the impact of historical trauma, because we talk about blood memory and, mm-hmm, genetic transference, and there's still fear in our populations, and there's this avoidance of cultural things. But we had a group of little children come into our elders' luncheon, and they spoke in Anishinaabe, Mon, and it was wonderful to hear them. And I'm not a fluent speaker, and they're trying to get me involved in the language immersion program, but we do so much traveling, it's hard to commit to periods of time to do this. So I pick up words, one here or one there. But I remember in our home, when my dad was fluent and my great auntie came, and my dad's older brother and an uncle, and they sat around the table and spoke in the language. And us kids were taught not to interfere or interrupt. So they would say something and laugh, and we always wondered what they were talking about, you know. And So I asked my father one day, I said, Dad, I want to learn those words. I want to learn that language. And my father told me, he said, well, I don't think it will suit you well in this among this population.
Oh, boy.
Because we were the only Native family in a non-Native town. And it was quite a gauntlet to run. And the stories of that are in my book, Dancing My Dream. And I believe I had dreams from my youth on about my life and about my path that I would walk. The woman I'd share my life with, I saw her 7 years before I met her. And 7 years later, she was walking down the street, and I was like a bird dog on point. I said, there she is. And 2.5 months later, we were married right after she turned 16 because I didn't want to give her a chance to get to 17 for fear that somebody come along and sweep her away.
That's amazing.
And we will celebrate 49 years together here pretty soon.
Wow, awesome.
Our 16th grandchild will be coming here pretty soon.
Wonderful.
And we have a great grandchild. So it's been a wonderful transition and heritage. But I learned early on, there were times when I tried to orchestrate my own life and organize it, and everything turned to dust. And so when I turned it over to the Creator, started following those dreams and following those good teachings, and my life's been great.
Opened your eyes.
It's been great.
Yes.
Yeah.
You are also regarded as a spiritual healer.
Yes.
Now, that healing process is actually done in a variety of ways. What is the primary way that you are a healer?
Well, the Creator shared this with me, and I don't try to assume anything. I've never assumed any title. I let the people decide that,
right.
And they call me elder, and they call me a Shemoganesh or warrior. I never said that about myself, and some have said holy man.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was not me making those affirmations or trying to pressure my way into anything. And I have to say this morning. One of my greatest experiences came because of Mike Jensen, who works at New Day Treatment Center, and he really sent me to an educational program out in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and it's a Native American Training Institute, and it was a really launching of my experience and the progress of it. And after that, I began writing a lot more, and I write poetry, and my songs are to my poetry, and so Mike had a lot to do with that, and I honor him and his wife today.
Okay. Very good. We're talking with Warren Petoskey, who is the elder in residence, the first elder in residence for Northern Michigan University Center for Native American Studies. We'll be right back. We're talking with Native American elder in residence for this week here at Northern Michigan University, Warren Petoskey, my in-studio guest. Again, thank you for being here. You are expressive not only as a writer and a speaker, but as a musician. In fact, you're holding in your hand a Native American flute. Would you describe this instrument for us, first of all?
The best story I've heard about the flute is a Navajo story, which I really like and relate to. And the story is that this village was under attack, and it didn't look like they would survive. And a mother, in those days, there were giant reeds, and she placed her son in a reed and tied the ends up, and she put holes in the side of the reed, not only so he could breathe, but so that there was sounds that came through those holes. And she cast him adrift on this river, and a woman found him and took him in. And he remembered those reeds, and he told that story later on. And they started gathering reeds and making these flutes out of the reeds. And then eventually they found they could make them out of red cedar. And I always thought that was a great story. And I'm a student of Carlos Nakai and many other flute players.
We hear his music here quite often, yes.
And I traded for a flute. I traded one of my walking sticks for a flute that a guy had just made. And that flute is in my CD. So
Wow, okay.
I want to try to do a song for you.
All right.
Okay.
Shemigwetch. That was beautiful. I also want to remind listeners that we did mention a book that you wrote a while back called Dancing My Dream. That's available on Amazon.com and area bookstores as well. And is that music you just played also part of a CD, I understand? No?
That's what came to me here this morning.
Wow. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that.
And I try to be spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, everything that I ever tried to do or orchestrate turned to dust. So I just try to be sensitive to what the Creator wants, even when I dress in the day.
When you're here this week speaking with the Native American Studies students and so forth, is there a specific message that you're planning to give? I shouldn't say planning, but yes.
Well, we've... there's a lot of information, and sometimes I don't feel like I've brought enough with me, but yet we've been able to fill all these time slots. And my primary message is knowing the boarding schools happened and the residual issues are prevalent in our lives today as Native people, but we're getting better. We're getting healthier. And but we still have a 400% higher mortality rate than any other ethnic population. So it says we have something, an issue that is unique to our populations that we really need to work on. And I think the Native American Studies program has made a major jump start. And I know there's a lot of other collegiate programs that, in fact, I went on the internet prior to coming up here and I typed in Native American Studies College. And the number of references that came up was just awesome, you know. So I was trying to make contact with a lot of them and introduce my book because my book speaks of a transition from a very dysfunctional period of time to the place that I'm in today where I feel that I'm free of those things, even though the scars are there and the memory is there. But I think the reason for that is so that I can share from a more realistic point of view and a more genuine, and realizing, too, that there are many, many speakers out there. I met one recently at Hannibal, and one of the most powerful messages I've ever heard. And there's a couple of ladies down in Detroit, and by the way, the urban programs that in Michigan, the largest numbers of our population are actually in urban areas, not on the reservations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are two sisters, and that one that is the director of American Indian Services, and the other one is a professor of anthropology at Eastern Michigan University. They're twins, and they're Cherokee Choctaw, so they bring a different vision from a different area of the country. And then there's Sue Franklin, who's the director of Southeast Michigan Indians Incorporated, and she is from Sugar Island, and her ancient ancestor is Chingwok. And then there's Mona Stonefish, who's from Waupu Island, mm-hmm. and a very powerful speaker. I always thought we needed to have a woman's program where the women spoke and the men listened.
About time, right?
Yeah. I don't know if that's been done in many areas, but I know I heard Mona Stonefish and these two ladies I mentioned, two of them, and Sue, too. And it was powerful things they had to say. And I think our public needs to hear that, and our young people. And we need to keep promoting this message.
It is very gratifying that that is even happening.
Yes.
Yes,
yes it is.
And we appreciate you being a part of it. And being with this Native American Studies program as its first elder in residence. Warren Petoskey, thank you very much for being here. Chimegwech.
I feel very honored.
Oh, thank you. And we'll be back with more music on Humoresque in just a moment.